Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the new Grizzly Bear Advisory Council, the newest candidate for Montana governor, and where water from the Berkeley Pit is being released. It's Friday, October 4th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Cropland, golf courses, lawns, none are safe from feral hogs that Montana livestock officials say are potentially poised to invade Montana. Montana Public Radio's Kevin Trevlin has more.
Officials received reports several months ago that wild Canadian pigs were merely 6 miles from the Montana border. Tani Szymanski with the State Department of Livestock says the invasive animal species could pose significant problems for Montana's agriculture sector.
They have tremendous destructive capabilities. They will root into any sort of ground cover. They are predatory in nature. They carry a whole host of diseases that could potentially spread to other livestock species and to people.
The state legislature made feral hogs a prohibited species in 2015. Since then, numbers from a University of Saskatchewan study indicate growing populations in the Canadian province. The Livestock Department has been working with state fish, wildlife, and parks and the Federal Wildlife Services to aerially surveil the northern border for swine. To Szymanski's knowledge, none have crossed into Montana yet. But she says that could happen, quote, at any time. Szymanski says Wildlife Services will kill any encroaching hogs. Montana residents who spot one are encouraged to call the Livestock Department and, quote, squeal on the pigs. Kevin Trevelin, Montana Public Radio.
Montana officials are expanding restrictions on the transport of big game animals to prevent the spread of a fatal disease. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks announced the move Wednesday after a deer killed near Huntley, northeast of Billings, tested positive for chronic wasting disease. State wildlife workers killed the two-year-old buck after it showed signs of infection. CWD had previously shown up along the Canadian border and was first noticed in Montana, south of Billings, 2 years ago. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks spokesperson Bob Gibson says this is the furthest CWD has been found in Montana.
It spreads a little bit all of the time. Geographically, it spreads slowly. So we know that it is spreading northward. And this is the first confirmation of that.
Gibson says they're expanding the CWD management zone to take that into account. The limitation applies to deer, elk, or moose in Yellowstone County and a portion of Bighorn County. That means hunters should leave the brain, head, and spine in the restricted area so that CWD doesn't spread any further. Hunters are also advised to have harvested animals tested and not to consume the meat if it's positive for the disease. Montana's newly formed Grizzly Bear Advisory Council met for the first time in East Helena yesterday. The group is looking to find common ground for ways Montanans can coexist with the bears. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
The first meeting of the council focused on laying a broad groundwork to confront the much-debated issue of what to do as grizzly bear populations expand.
Where do we think grizzly bears belong in the state?
Martha Williams is the director of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. She spoke to the 18-member council made up of conservation group leaders, outdoor industry professionals, and ranchers. Governor Steve Bullock created the council through an executive order in July, asking them to come up with recommendations on the management of grizzly bears in Montana, quote, particularly those issues on which there is significant social disagreement, unquote. Again, FWP's Williams.
What does it mean for people living with grizzly bears where they haven't been for decades and even longer for some people? How do we help them? What does that mean? We even recognize there's a component of how do we address hunting? Let's not just kind of sweep that under the rug.
The council plans to hold public meetings in Bozeman and Missoula before the end of the year. More public input meetings are expected around the state in early 2020. The Montana Grizzly Bear Advisory Council draft policy recommendations to the governor are expected before next summer. Governor Bullock was scheduled to give opening remarks at the council meeting Thursday, but a representative from his office appeared on his behalf. Bullock's presidential campaign is scheduled to be out of state. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Governor Steve Bullock has once again failed to qualify for the primary debate stage in his bid for the presidency. Kayla DeRoche reports.
The fourth Democratic presidential primary debate will air in 2 weeks, and Governor Steve Bullock won't be there. He has yet to break into the top 12 Democrats in the race. It's the third time he's failed to meet the minimum funding and polling threshold to participate. So far, he's appeared in one of the 3 televised debates, participating in the second Democratic debate in July. The Democratic National Committee, along with debate hosts CNN and the New York Times, determined the qualifiers in May, according to the DNC. Candidates must get 2% or more support in at least 4 polls, and for donorship, they must get 130,000 donors and at least 400 different donors per state in a minimum of 20 states. The organizers determined Bullock did not qualify. The debate is scheduled for October 15th in Westerville, Ohio. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Missoula businesswoman and philanthropist Whitney Williams announced yesterday she's running for governor. She's the fourth Democrat to enter the race. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Williams launched her first campaign for public office in a video Thursday morning and then rallied a small group of supporters on the state capitol steps in Helena that afternoon.
I'm Whitney Williams, and I'm running to be your next governor.
Williams says she will protect public lands, bring down prescription drug costs, support economic development and public education, and never support a sales tax. Williams has deep political ties in Montana. Her father, Pat Williams, represented the state in U.S. Congress for 9 terms from the late 1970s to early 1990s. Carol Williams, her mother, was the first woman to serve as the state Senate minority and majority leader. Whitney Williams is the founder and CEO of Williams Works, a business that helps companies and organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation pursue philanthropic projects around the world. She says she moved her business to Missoula 3 years ago after working between Montana and Seattle, Washington for more than a decade. In her campaign announcement, Williams focused attacks on current Republican congressman and gubernatorial candidate Greg Gianforte.
And with friendship and respect to those running in this Democratic primary, I can and I will defeat Greg Gianforte.
Dan Duffy, a spokesperson for Greg Gianforte, says the Republican is focused on bringing a, quote, positive message, end quote, Greg's message is resonating with Montanans, unquote. The campaign manager for Republican Tim Fox says Williams is a, quote, well-connected insider, unquote, and Fox, not Gianforte, is Republicans' best chance at winning the governor's seat. State Senator Albert Olszewski is also running in the Republican primary race. The Democrats Williams faces in the primary include State House Minority Leader Casey Schreiner, former State Representative Riley Neal, and Lieutenant Governor Mike Cooney. Cooney issued a statement Thursday welcoming Williams to the race. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Montanans posed questions about the impeachment inquiry, improving rural health care, and the latest news on trade negotiations to Democratic Senator John Tester at a face-to-face town hall in Billings yesterday. Nikki Ouellette reports.
Yeah, we got, how you doing? Good to see you, man. Yes, how are you? Oh, my goodness.
More than 100 people showed up to the Montana State University's Petro Theater for Tester's third town hall of the year.
These are important meetings. Are a bit of mental gymnastics for me because I don't know exactly know what you're going to ask.
About 2 dozen people questioned Tester.
The first one has to do with our president soliciting dirt from a foreign government.
Yes.
And I don't hear very much about what's going on in the Senate. That's my first question, is in terms of how you view this particular problem and how, being a member of the Senate, you're going to address it.
If, in fact, this comes to fruition and what's claimed to be happening and what I kind of read in the transcript happened, then we got a problem, and we've got to hold people accountable. On the other side of the coin, I think there's still more information that has to be brought up before you get a situation of a quid pro quo. I sound like a lawyer, but I'm not. Okay.
In a press scrum after the town hall, Tester said the House investigation should be narrowly focused and shouldn't bar Congress from addressing other legislation like government spending, trade agreements, and infrastructure.
My name is Barbara Gulick, and from Billings.
Mm-hmm.
What legislation you might sponsor or support that would fall within the framework of the Green New Deal?
There were extracurricular things, we'll call them, put into that bill that have nothing to do with climate change. And they were taken out later, but nonetheless, they were put in. For example, we're going to guarantee a job for everybody. That takes the eye off the ball, and quite frankly, was, in my opinion, and I'm not always right, but in my opinion, was not a smart thing to do. So I will tell you that there are proposals from cap and trade to taxes on carbon to credits for wind and solar, which I have traditionally been in favor of. I would rather approach it from a carrot than a stick of dynamite.
Good afternoon, Senator Tester. My name is Joy Honey. I'm professor of sociology here at MSU Billings.
Thanks.
What I really want to know is, in terms of legislation, in terms of policy, what do you think would be most important in confronting the problem of suicide in Montana?
Well, first of all, the bill that I got isn't going to solve everybody's problems, and is not going to solve the mental health crisis among farmers or any other group, but I think it's a step.
Tester recently introduced a bill that would funnel $3 million toward a public awareness campaign aimed at destigmatizing mental health care among farmers.
You know, I was told some years ago that mental health is probably the biggest health care issue this country is going to face over the next 50 years, and I agree with that. We just need to get more folks on the ground. So what's that mean? You got to make college affordable for those folks that want to go into those areas. Should make college affordable for anybody who wants to go into any area, but specifically if you want more folks to go into psychiatry, psychology, social work, family therapy, all that stuff. And then make it, if they get the benefit, that they have to contribute some time in the rural areas of our state.
My name's Robert Hill. Glad you're here, Senator Tester. My question is, what's the latest on the tariffs?
There's probably not a person in this room that doesn't think that China needs to be held accountable. The problem is that if you're going to hold China accountable, you can't do it alone, not in this day and age. You've got to have your allies with you, and we don't. And I just don't know how this is going to end up as a good story in the end. I mean, USMCA is going to get passed, I have no doubt about that, but it's not that much different. Unless you're a dairy farmer or you manufacture a few auto parts, it's not that much different than NAFTA. And so are we going to end up going through all this misery for nothing? And I'm concerned that that might end up being the case.
Good afternoon, Senator Ed Saunders, Laurel, Montana. Thank you very much for holding this forum. I'd like to know your thoughts on the long-term challenges of VA Montana in attracting and keeping qualified medical health providers for Montana's veterans, and I thank you.
I think if recruitment is important, I don't think it's nuclear physics. I think it's just a matter of making sure you got the right people at the table when you're doing the recruitment. Go to the school and get the superintendent, get the banker, and get the guy that's in the head of the medical center, and get them to be a part of the recruitment team. Takes a little bit of work, take a little additional work, but you end up with somebody who knows the community and is talking to people who are sold in that community.
Town halls have become a contentious issue in recent years as voters demand access to their representatives in Congress. While Tester has held several town halls in person, his Republican colleagues, Senator Steve Daines and Congressman Greg Gianforte, often hold them on the phone. Daines and Gianforte say this allows them to hear from more people. Detractors say the teletown halls lack transparency. In Billings, I'm Nikki Ouellette for Yellowstone Public Radio News.
This week, for the first time ever, once toxic water from the Berkeley Pit, the abandoned open-pit copper mine in Butte, is being treated and released into the headwaters of the Clark Fork River. Montana Public Radio's Nora Sachs has more.
It's Monday afternoon, and I'm standing on the banks of Silverbow Creek in the center of Butte with Ron Halsey, an operations manager for Atlantic Richfield. We're watching an endless rush of clear water cascade through a man-made rock wall into the stream, which is one of the headwaters of the Clark Fork River.
Seeing the water come out of the rocks there and having discharged the creek's been the best part of the day so far.
He's in high spirits because while there's no official ribbon cutting or pomp and circumstance, we're witnessing a historic milestone in Butte's Superfund cleanup. 37 years ago, Atlantic Richfield, a former oil company now owned by BP, abandoned the Berkeley Pit and allowed the former open-pit copper mine to start flooding with acidic, heavy metal-laden mine water. Now, with a green light from the Environmental Protection Agency, Treated water from the Berkeley Pit is being released into Silver Bow Creek for the first time.
How much water is being discharged right now?
Today we're discharging about 6 million gallons per day, or about 5,000 GPM, or gallons per minute.
That sounds like a lot, but the Berkeley Pit currently holds about 50 billion gallons of toxic water. Left to its own devices, it would keep flooding, and eventually breach the bedrock and contaminate Butte's aquifer and creeks. But under Superfund, the two companies in charge of the pit are legally required to prevent that from happening. Last year, Atlantic Richfield and Montana Resources, which owns the active copper mine next door, launched a pilot project to start managing the pit well before it reaches that so-called critical level. Ron Halsey with AR says today,
The combination of Montana Resources pumping water from the pit and then us treating it and discharging it is the proof that we can actually hold the water level steady in the pit.
Before any Berkeley pit water reaches the creek, it travels a spaghetti-like route through Montana Resources mining operations. First, it's pumped out of the Berkeley pit and treated with lime. Then water from the backside of the tailings dam is piped down to Atlantic Richfield's new $19 million polishing plant, where it's further treated to meet state and federal water quality standards. Finally, Halsey says, the cleaned water is sent through a buried 24-inch pipe to a manhole on the creek bank.
And the water comes into the manhole where it loses a lot of its energy before it discharges through those rocks into the creek.
Tim Hilmo, a project manager with Atlantic Richfield, says as part of the larger pilot project, the companies are going to study,
do we have to pull 3 million gallons a day out of the Berkeley pit to hold it steady? Do we have to pull 3.5 million gallons out of the Berkeley pit or 4? We don't know. We think it's in that range, so we're starting today at 3. So as of today, we hope we've halted the rise of the pit, and then as we monitor it, we'll figure out and fine-tune that volume to hold the pit steady.
According to Atlantic Richfield, the water being released into the creek is continuously monitored and sampled every day. If there's ever an issue with quality or flow, they can adjust or stop it as needed. Hilmo says the company believes that putting clean water into the stream will have beneficial effects on the watershed.
You know, more flow in the summer, just more flow in general. Not too much flow to where it's problematic, but add water to the system. We think it'll make an overall healthier creek.
Yeah. Are you aware of any potential negative impacts that adding water could have?
Not at this time.
So far, the discharge of treated Berkeley pit water into Silver Bow Creek has been regarded in Butte as a positive and long-awaited step forward. If everything stays on track, Atlantic Richfield plans to ramp up to 10 million gallons per day over the next few weeks. The company is still in discussions with EPA and Montana Resources about building an additional water treatment plant to draw the level of toxic water in the Berkeley pit down further. In Butte, I'm Nora Sachs, Montana Public Radio.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.